What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on Will Scouching. He is one of the best scouts I've ever come across. He is excellent. Super excited to have Will on. He does his own data tracking, pours through a ton of video. I can't think of anyone better to talk what makes a team and a player good versus bad, what you're looking for in players that would be projectable, the translatable skills we've talked about on the Hockey IQ newsletter in this podcast in the past. Just everything in between, you know, what he's learned, what things do we need to focus on that might be hard to teach and could be glass ceilings for players. So how do we get above those? A bunch of different things like this. Absolutely wonderful person. Definitely go support him on Patreon and check out his work. Again, it's Will Scouching. You can find him online. Awesome, awesome episode. Excited to share it. Without further ado, let's get into it. All right. Today on the podcast, the Hockey IQ podcast, we bring on one of my favorites, Will Scouch of Scouching. Is it .ca all in Canada?
.ca, yeah. Going with the national pride, you know, .ca.
Oh. So you're coming out of the cesspool that is Toronto, as they call it?
Yeah. Unfortunately. Born and raised, yep.
Beautiful. Well, I got to say, I feel like you're the fine diamond that has risen out of the crop in the fields there. So
I have no comment on that.
Excited to get into this one. So we'll start maybe a little bit on your background. I think you're sure. A little bit like Mitch Brown, where you really didn't have much of a playing career, but you've picked up an unbelievable eye for the game that is second to none.
Heavens no, I was not a player. I played not well. I was the kid who was like, I'm 6 feet tall. I was about this tall when I was about 14. And so my coaches were always like, you're playing defense because no one else wants to. And I wasn't terrible at it, but I never went very far. But I certainly listened to I was one of the kids that was always listening to my coaches. That was always the kind of thing I did. But I was also the kid with the yearbooks every year. I'd get them for Christmas from my parents and, you know, memorize everything I possibly could. And, you know, look at all the draft picks and all the trades and all the, even like the jersey numbers. And I loved just the stats and the world of hockey that was out there. And just loved seeing what was going on in junior hockey and leagues around the world. And, you know, it was just, that's always what sort of captured my imagination, captured my attention. And I'm also like, in real life, I'm a big like science fiction guy. Like I'm always obsessed with sort of what's coming and how what is happening now can sort of shape the future and how what's coming down the pipe might change the game or change whatever you want to talk about. So scouting and looking at junior players, it all kind of feeds off of all those sort of things. And the tracking work sort of came from that obsession with data. I mean, for me, it started really in hockey with the analytics sort of revolution in like the late 2000s, maybe early 2010s. When you started seeing analytics people pointing things out in the league that turned out to pretty much come true. And it sort of cut through a lot of bias. And I really just started from scratch and said, all right, well, how can these principles be applied to junior hockey and production for junior players and entering the NHL draft? And is there sort of a better way of evaluating young talent for projecting them into the NHL, or at least giving yourself the best chance to get a player? And it's really just sort of built over the last 5 years. It's just gotten more and more intense and more widespread. And, you know, the focus on data for me now, that's my primary focus, is just building my own databases, because I think in my work, it also helps with my eye and it helps hone what I'm looking at, is seeing that live feedback on the data as it goes in and seeing, okay, you know, maybe a player had a bad turnover in one situation, but the rest of the game, like, their transitions were great, their passing data is great, they're generating offense. And so there's a lot more context that you can pick up, but your eye might naturally just stick to the bad thing that happened and you might kind of negate the rest of it. So to me, it's really interesting to sort of combine all that together. And it's just come from a long time love of just stats and just dorkiness that, you know, is finally coming out a little bit more in hockey. So I'm trying to be a little bit of a cog in that machine, I think.
Right. Just a cog.
Yeah.
I don't believe that for a second. And I mean, you've got a great eye for the game, and I love how you think about your scouting reports. I think they're very different, or scouting reports, as we call them, right?
Sure. Yeah.
well, you put them out and you say, think, move, get, pass, shoot.
Yeah.
But I don't think that people realize, like, that is kind of how you think of the importance of those elements. Yep. As well.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I that was one of the first things I ironed out, where, you know, like, when people ask me for, like, advice or something with how to get into this, which happens a little bit. And the biggest thing I sort of, it sounds cliche, but the thing I tell them is, like, kind of forget what you think you know, like, just kind of start from scratch and just sit back and watch hockey and forget about who's on the ice. Just totally, you know, like, I tell people to go watch free hockey games. Like, the best resource is the Russian Junior League channel on YouTube. They post all of their games for free. And it's a great, it's a surprisingly good resource to sort of cut your teeth and just watch the game, because you've got some really talented junior teams. Like, SK St. Petersburg's junior team is really talented. They're full of great young players. CSK Moscow has some good ones as well. But there's also some really bad teams. And I think it's important to know what a really good team looks like and what a really bad team looks like, and why they're good and why they're bad. There can be many reasons why they might be good or bad. You know, maybe their goaltender can't stop a beach ball, but, like, in terms of the actual flow of the game, there's a lot of things you can sort of dig into that might make a really talented team really good and what might make a talented team really bad. And so when I went through that process a few years ago, just sort of going, all right, if I'm going to be serious about this, I need to, let's say, just start from scratch and sort of build up a philosophy from the ground up of, like, what I'm looking for. And some of it might be just validating things you already think you know, right? Like, you might just be like, well, yeah, it's nice to complete passes and it's nice to shoot the puck in the net. Like, that's great. But there's a lot more to hockey that sort of are these, like, little micro events that can be bettered or worsened by skill or physicality or all these other traits that can color a player's game. So when I thought about how I wanted to structure how I communicate what I'm looking at, the things that I just wanted to boil it down as simple as possible, you know, like, what happens in a hockey game? Like, let's say you are a player on the ice. What do you contribute? You know, and I think the most important thing to me is how you process the game around you and how you're aware. Like, if you're jumping the defensive zone first before everyone else and the breakout hasn't even started yet, that's a bad sign to me. And I don't care how fast you are. I don't care how well you can shoot. I don't care how physical you are. If you're leaving your team out to dry in the defensive zone, or if you're holding onto the puck forever and won't ever pass the puck to your teammates, that's not really a passing issue. That's a mental issue. To me, that's a big problem, especially in the NHL, where the time you have to both receive the puck and make a play with it can be extremely limited. So I just worked it out and just said, look, what can happen on the ice? First, you got to know what's going on. First of all, like, be aware of your line mates, be aware of the opponent, know where everybody is and sort of stay aware and be responsible yourself when you do have the puck. You got to move around with the puck. You got to have it at some point. And for me, move can be speed or skill or agility or, you know, pursuit defense, like all these things that rely around the movement of the body. Because you can get away with being really, really skilled and not necessarily quick, but you can also get away with being pretty quick and not necessarily skilled. So to me, I don't really look at it and say, well, this player is really skilled and this player is really fast. I like this player more for this reason. It's more about how those strengths can color the rest of their game. And then the get category, it's like, sometimes junior players can forget about playing defense, but I would like to see at least a little bit of effort there. And with the passing and shooting, to me, those are the end results of all of the rest of the things. You know, to pass the puck in a dangerous way in the offensive zone and to shoot it in the net, you have to be in the offensive third of the ice. There's still 66% of the ice surface where you might not have the puck, and you still need to get it into those situations. So to me, those things kind of come last. And also those things, to me, especially shooting, are things that you can you might be able to develop and train with players and sort of bring up out of their game to a certain extent. So to me, it just kind of all logically follows one into the next. And I don't really think that there's anything on the ice that happens that kind of falls outside of those categories, unless it's a thing that is like a blend of the two. So it's nice because it keeps things relatively simple, but within those categories, you can explore a whole lot of different subjects and a whole lot of different disciplines that really can color a player's game. So my point is basically track the data, formulate it into something digestible, and then use the visual findings and communicate it effectively. And I think the best way to communicate it is keeping it relatively simple, but very detailed. So that's kind of the ultimate goal for me.
I mean, that's a very simple goal with many complex layers. So
yeah, that's the thing. Yeah.
I mean, that's what separates, I feel like, you from everyone else is how much you get into that. I'm thinking, you know, say if our listeners are not Will Scouch, are not that level of commitment, or aren't wanting to take that time or just don't have the time, you know, if they're a player, parent, or just coach who's just trying to get as much in as you can, especially since this is preseason. I know all the hockey coaches are slammed out there preparing for the season. Mm-hmm. You know, what are good things that you like to do or would recommend them doing? I know I like to watch channels without the volume. I feel like I can pick up more without that input into my ear saying, hey, check this little play out, blah, blah, blah. You know, I can focus on where I want to be on the ice.
Yeah. I think if I'm following correctly, like in this sort of time between years where it's more about like learning, I mean, I do it as well. Like, I think that learning and observing is a key sort of thing to sort of check yourself. And if you're a young player or a parent of a young player that wants to keep building their game, I mean, all I can say is that I know what I like to see. Like there's a guy in my Discord server who has a kid who's, I think, 11 or 12, and he's been watching my shows for like as long as I've been around, like 2 years. And, you know, he's kind of growing up as a pretty high level hockey player where he lives. And, you know, it's interesting to hear his dad talk to me and say, hey, like my son likes your work. And, you know, you've illuminated things for him that a lot of guys on his team don't get very much of. And a lot of that is that, you know, with the puck or without the puck play is just as important as with the puck play. And, you know, these things about, you know, getting the puck to the offensive zone effectively is completely a different sort of set of, you know, completely different way of thinking, especially for a young person, as opposed to, you know, like I remember being 10 or 11 and thinking, okay, I'm going to go into the offensive zone and I'm going to stay there and I'm going to score as many goals as I possibly can, because that's what's going to get me to the NHL. And I think that as you get older, you realize that, you know, everyone kind of gets just as talented as you are, and you have to get to the point where you can outthink them and play as a teammate really effectively. So I always tell people, like, I've had parents reach out to me about their kid and what they see and don't see in their, or what I see and don't see in their game. And sometimes it's like, I don't think your kid might get drafted because of these issues and these things. And I never say it with any disrespect, but it's meant to be sort of educational because, you know, again, like I try to emphasize, like, we're talking about kids and you have to be respectful, and they're working unbelievably hard, all of them, you hope. And that, yeah, like you, and so you have to sort of have that respect and hope that they also can learn and get better through that sort of constructive criticism. And it's not to say that like their career is over. It's just a matter of patching those holes, and you have to identify those holes and be honest with yourself in the first place to sort of patch them, and being able to concretely identify them, especially through data. You know, like if there are guys where they think they're great offensive transition players, but 50% of the time they're turning it over to the opponent, you have to explore why there's that disparity and figure it out. And I think the offseason could be a really good way of doing that, especially if you're a coach with guys who are, say, under 14 team going up to under 16, and you might be able to identify some things in data or just by visually looking at them where you can say, hey, you know, you're doing well so far, but we should work on these things. And just being open and honest about it while still being respectful and working through it with them, I think, is important, especially in the off season, for sure.
Yeah. And you mentioned data a lot right there, and you're obviously large into that. You know, for you, what are some of the illuminating ones, or what are a few of the big ones that really stick out? I know for a lot of people, it's almost paralysis by analysis, too many numbers in front of you. Mm-hmm. What are some of the big areas for you, or maybe just two or three. I don't think we should go too much longer than that to show or just elements of the game.
Yeah, that's the thing too, is it kind of goes back to the categories. Like, I try to keep it relatively simple in terms of how I communicate the data. I'm just pulling up my data sheets now. Like, it's what's interesting is that I don't really track that many different categories of thing. You know, like, I'm looking at, like, you can get a tremendous amount of insight when you're looking at all of the shot attempts that both teams take, where those shots are coming from, even if it's just a basic location-based thing, like high, medium, and low danger, passes, completing them, where those, if those, like, the, where those passes are headed. So if they're headed to the slot, that's a separate category I track. How many of those shot attempts are the player taking and where are they coming from? And then the big one that I just keep relying on more and more and more is their transition game. The game is played back and forth all night long. And if you have players on the ice who can affect offensive transitions positively and affect defensive transitions positively, you're going to have an easier time with the puck and getting it back and turning it around and getting the puck in the offensive zone. And then all those flashy skills can come out. But again, it's not the most complicated series of things I'm looking at, but through all of that, you can derive a heck of a lot of information. How successful are they at entering the offensive zone with control of the puck? How good are they at defending the defensive blue line relative to the offensive one? If, say, you're looking at a defenseman, if you're looking at a playmaking forward, perhaps, like, are they contributing with their passing game outside the offensive zone rather than just making plays and that's all they care about in the offensive zone and they take their foot off the gas and the rest of the ice? You can sort of infer a lot with just really basic data information. And I think that where with prospect work, I think where things go a little bit wrong is when you really try to just use the data and say, well, this is this, and this is why this is going to happen, or this player can be this because of this, which to a certain extent in the data you can do. But I also think that there's so many mitigating factors in junior hockey and so many mitigating factors in non-NHL hockey with the breadth of league quality, the quality of teammate disparities that can exist, you know, like an OHL kid with OHL line mates versus an SHL kid with pro SHL line mates, that's going to affect things. And that does make it a little bit more difficult to get concrete analysis. But I do think that you, at some point with scouting work, have to sort of put throw caution to the wind a little bit and just say, you know, at some point there is part of that just eye. You can sort of tell. Like, the data can help you, but I've seen lots of guys with really, really good data, and I don't think it projects. I've seen guys with really, really bad data, and I think that there's a lot of factors that might lead to that that don't have anything to do with that player. Like, if I went right off my data last year, for example, a guy like John Jason Paterka would not have been in my first round, but he was at 24 on my list because I had a good feeling that the shot differentials were not really his fault. And there was a number of things that I think that he had as very strong fundamentals that were very clearly apparent in the video and very clearly apparent just watching him play that, you know, like, I saw his teammates be unable to complete a D2D pass on a consistent basis in the German Pro League. Like, that's going to make your numbers look worse, even though you're not involved. And you have to be careful when you're looking at that information. So, you know, production is a great start, for example, but there's so much more to the picture that really does require a little bit of that backup with video to say, like, well, the data does check with what I'm seeing, or it doesn't, and here is why. And I think that's why the YouTube thing for me made so much sense, because it can be 20 minutes long and I only need to show the clip once and talk about what's happening in the clip as I'm showing it, and then I can just move on to the next concept, and then 20 minutes later there's a pretty good, you know, contextual view of what the player does, and I've shown you how I got to that conclusion. So yeah, it's a tightrope to walk, but it's definitely very valuable. And I think it definitely helps me with my eye as well, sort of honing that in and getting a concrete profile on a guy.
Yeah, and that leads directly into the next question I have here, which is when you're looking at skills, right? And the same thing you said, even with like the data, like, you're overlooking some things because you're thinking it's not that important. There's contextual things that go into it, you know. Mm-hmm. For you, I mean, there's obviously hard things that you really can't teach, or like extremely hard to teach later on. I'm curious, you know, what are things for you? Like if they, you don't really see XYZ element, or you're not seeing at least this element in their game that you're saying, hey, they're likely never going to develop that crucial element. Like you need to focus on figuring this out now, because if you don't start now, you're going to have so many issues.
Well, look, I think the biggest thing that I've learned with regards to that is, I mean, I watch a lot of NHL hockey too, just whenever I have the time. And I mean, I watch a lot of hockey around the world as well. And I think I don't think people quite understand like just how good the NHL is. It's extraordinarily fast. It's extraordinarily just physical constantly, especially in the playoffs. It's, you know, the thinking, the speed at which they make their decisions, and the amount of time they have to hold on to the puck before they get a legitimate physical or stick first challenge from someone that is also very talented and can cause that turnover. It's extremely limited. And the word that I always use when people, you know, the word I always use is pace. And that doesn't necessarily always mean the fastest player out there, but I am looking for players that play with pace. You know, not guys who need the game to be played at their speed to be successful. Like, I want them to be guys who dictate how the game is going on when they're on the ice. Whether that means if you don't have the puck, like, are you using speed and agility to find open space and make yourself a passing target? And when you do make yourself a passing target, do you have something else in mind that you're going to do right from there? I'll give a good example from this year's draft. Like, William Eklund is a brilliant hockey player with regards to how he processes the game. He uses his edges super, super well, finds open ice, makes himself a target, pucks in the neutral zone, and he's got it. He finds a guy like that, pucks in the offensive zone with control. He makes a great pass because he just knows. Like, he doesn't need to think about it so much. He doesn't need to survey the ice and take 5 seconds to make a decision. He knows where his target is. And part of that might be a tactical deployment for his team, but that's the biggest thing I look for. If I see a player who is playing just a slow game, and even if they are playing slow, it's not the end of the world. They will need, you know, like physical resiliency on their feet. If they're going to be facing pressure, how do they escape that pressure? That's a big thing I look at as well. Those would be probably the two biggest things, I think, is pace and escaping pressure that's very, very heavy, one way or the other. I think that can be very, very hard. Like, the last thing I want is a kid who doesn't have a ton of pace, who just came off of 120-point season in the OHL, for example, and everyone thinks he's going to be an NHL hotshot day one, and he struggles to score in the NHL right away because that pace just isn't there, and it's just way too much of a jump in the speed and quality of the game that they can't keep up in the first place. And then you have to get them not only keeping up, but also able to make plays as they're keeping up, which to me is a very, very big barrier. Like, I see Alexi Lafreniere dealing with that in the NHL. Like, he's an extraordinarily talented player with regards to his skill and his vision with the puck, but like, his pace last year was kind of questionable. He got away with a lot in the Quebec League, and the Rangers, I don't think, really put him in the right scenario where he could kind of get away with that lack of pace in his game. And he did seem to improve a little bit over the year, but he's one where last year I thought there might be a bit of an adjustment for him in the NHL, and he has had that. And I think a lot of that comes down to being extremely unfamiliar with just how intense the NHL can be relative to the Quebec League with regards to pace if you don't have it. And that's the biggest thing I think that I'm learning more and more is really important, especially when I look back at guys who have been drafted high and haven't really worked out at this point. It seems to be a common theme.
That's awesome. And that's a perfect answer. And then on the flip side of that, what are some areas that players could be poor in that you'll overlook, or you think are a little bit overrated? Like, personally for me, I think some people are all skating. You have to be a good skater. And I think maybe that's a little overrated. I mean, you look at guys like Mark Stone, like, doesn't have to be great. He knows where he's going to get and he can get there.
Yeah.
So that for me, like, that's something that I look over a little bit more than others, and I think might be slightly overrated compared to the consensus. You know, what maybe are some things for you?
Well, I think something where the game is still kind of catching up, because there hasn't been anyone who really has jumped in and explored this in the NHL from like a full-on let's just go for it attitude. But I honestly think that there's still a bit of an adjustment with what regards to what defense means. And I think people look at defense and, you know, like when I look at defensemen, I see a lot of fundamental things that you need to see, but they're all very basic. Like if you're a defenseman, you just need to get the puck off the opponent, you know, and obviously there are certain things that you want to see, but none of the things that I want to see out of a defenseman really come down to sort of the physicality of their game or the size of them. I think that the size of a player is just it's a spectrum. It's not necessarily something that can make or break a player. There are lots of defensemen over the years that I have really latched onto that I think could be very, very talented defenders that are under 6 feet tall. And some of them get drafted and some of them don't. But I do genuinely believe, like, one of the best defensive defensemen I tracked this year was playing in the Czech second division and didn't get drafted this year. And he is 5 foot nine. And he didn't have a great under 18, so maybe that's probably why. But Jiří Tkáček is a guy who is 5 foot nine, who has incredibly quick feet. He's got great gap management through the neutral zone. He played pro hockey all year this year in the Czech second division. And his ability to sort of just monitor those gaps, get his stick in the way, and lead with his stick first, he's not going to win physical battles. But in my data tracking, he plugged up enough defensive zone transitions that he was one of the best suppressors of dangerous shot attempts in his own end. And I think that obviously you can say, well, that's not going to project to the NHL because it's bigger and more physical and more mean. But he's also a 17-year-old kid playing in a pro league and doing really well playing defensively. And he's, you know, like I get the feeling that people just look at him and just write him off because of his size. And I think that when, especially with defensemen, I think you can make the argument that size can help you, but I feel like on the smaller end with defensemen specifically, there is that gap. And I think a lot of really good, talented young defensemen kind of get overlooked just because they're, you know, 5'9", 5'10", and they're, you know, there's question marks, but especially if we're talking like in the NHL draft outside the first two rounds, you're taking a crapshoot anyway. So you may as well take the undersized guy who can still perform well, especially if they've got a great set of feet under them, because I think that a great set of feet for a defenseman can unlock pretty much any disadvantage that a lack of size might bring you. If you can use your feet to your advantage and manage that gap, you're doing just fine to me. You're going to figure it out. And that's, I think, something that I think there still is a bit of a change there, especially looking at the kind of defenseman that went off the board this year in the draft.
Well, maybe the problem was he was just not put in an environment. I think there's like a 50-year-old on his team that really have pace to challenge him.
Some guy. I heard some guy named Jaromír Jágr is in there somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, he might even own the team while he's playing for the team. You know,
he does own the team. That's the wild part. Yeah.
Yeah, so you would think that Jágr would be like, hey, you got to take this kid. He's the next big star. You know, he should have done something for the kid.
I know, right? I know.
No, that's too funny. But so size, you think, is a big issue there.
Just for defensemen, really. Like, I think that the small defensemen, I think, are still an area where there's room to improve, especially because people seem to think those small defensemen lean so heavily offensively. And I'm sitting there going, well, they lean so heavily offensively because they always have the puck. Like, that's why they're leaning offensively, is because they're good and they're mobile and they don't have to play defense as often. That seems to be the case for a lot of these guys, and they just get overlooked because they don't think they project to the NHL. And I'd be curious to see, just having the support of an NHL team and having them believe in you might be enough of a boost for them to get over that hump and say, all right, maybe this is something I can actually do, rather than go undrafted once, twice, three times, four times, and they end up in the AHL on like an AHL deal. It's like, it just makes it so much harder for them when I don't think it has to be.
That's true. And I think we should talk about a defenseman that didn't get drafted, but I know you and I are, I would say, maybe ridiculously high compared to others. Lukas Gustafsson.
Oh, yes.
Yes. You couldn't get away from it
with
me.
That's my boy. Oh, that's my boy.
So he's he played prep hockey. They didn't really have too much of a season. And he technically, I don't think he was supposed to be with the Steel. But I think he was good enough where they snuck him in for a few games to actually play.
Yep.
What are some elements in his game, even though it's a low sample size or small sample size, that gets you excited about a defenseman like that?
Oh my God. I mean, look, that's one where I really thought that if an NHL team had done their homework, he would have gotten picked. And if there was a full season, I think he would have.
You could just read our mock draft. I mean, we literally laid it out there for him. I mean, his dad is an unbelievable resource in general. He's in an unbelievable program with unbelievable coaches, and he's only going to be going to Boston College, where apparently they play some half decent hockey.
Like, yeah, they're,
he's got a long runway. Yeah. Like, I think that NHL teams may have screwed up on that one.
Well, yeah, they can circle back next year, I guess. But when he's a second round pick, I don't know. I want people to remember who sent them. But yeah, he's a guy who kind of caught my eye just by chance. I was watching Chicago play. This was like maybe February, like late in the year. And I was tracking someone else on the team, and the guy he was playing defense with was catching my eye way more often. And I Googled him, and I go, okay, so this guy is a late 2002 born guy who played for Cushing last year and was well over a point per game. And so there's production there, and he's all part of the Chicago Steel family. So let's dig in and see what's there. Cause you know, the kid can skate, he's got some skill, he plays defense, but you know, he's really, really mobile, and there's a lot of things to like about him. So I checked him out and started tracking some data on him. One thing that blew me away, and again, he didn't play a ton of minutes. And from what I've been told, he's going to be playing probably top pair minutes for Chicago next year when a bunch of their guys go to college or whatever. But I'm just pulling up his data. Like, so first thing that stuck out to me, and I've done 5 games of his, and granted, it's a bit of a low sample, but the total ice time in 5-on-5 minutes was 46 minutes, which is not nothing. But that also indicates that he wasn't playing very much. The biggest thing that sticks out in my data so far is that he is the most involved player that I tracked this year, involved in transitions going either direction. So offensively and defensively, he was the most active player across blue lines going both directions. And that was surprising. He is a player who is flawed. I think he's a player who doesn't quite, I don't think he ever felt quite comfortable at the USHL level. He, especially with the puck on his own stick, but you could definitely tell that there's a player there, I think. And, you know, as long as he gets stronger and sort of better with, you know, like he has all the right instincts. The things I love about him is on those defensive plays, his lateral ability to just close gaps and cover ice. Like even if he needs to pinch over to his offside, he does it so fluidly and so effectively that he can get involved. And if he does get involved, he leads stick first, and he's great with that stick. And if that stick does get on the puck and frees up the puck, he can turn it around really quickly and find an easy outlet option. Sometimes he can kind of get caught under pressure and just fire it down the ice and ice the puck, which you don't want to see. But I think he's got more than enough talent, especially if he works on his skating and getting a bit stronger, that he can escape that pressure super well and find an outlet option even quicker. And if he does have some open space to work with and he starts carrying the puck up the ice, then he's got the skill and the shot quality and the vision with his passing to score points. I mean, per 60 minutes that he was on the ice with Chicago this year, he was pretty productive, even though he wasn't playing that much and he only scored 4 points. He still drove some pretty interesting metrics for me, at least. So he's a guy who I thought might get a flyer. I keep a list of guys that I would have picked. And he's on that list as a late round pick this year, and he went undrafted. And I was kind of disappointed, especially with the guys that didn't go undrafted. He's not perfect, but the raw ability that he's got there, especially as a guy who you hope will play full time in the USHL next year on a really, really good team in Chicago. Yeah, I mean, I think the trajectory is there that the more opportunity you give him, the more he's going to run with it. So I'm really thrilled. I'm not the only one on the island with him, that's for sure.
I thought a lot of his difficulties actually came with him reading the play like too well or too early. I don't know if he was cheating a little bit, but it seemed like he would get a puck and he would be lacking support options. I thought he read it well. Maybe it was just a good guess, or he was kind of like Roman Josi. If it's questionable, I'm going type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of the instincts as well. I think he's got great skating, especially like you said, ladder, like he can really explode. Mm-hmm. From a position, and he is deceptive defensively. Like you don't understand exactly when he's going to get you. I thought the same with like Shea, I think it's Booyam.
Oh yeah. Shai Booyam.
Yeah. I thought he was very similar. Like he'd be playing defense and he'd be in like this crouched, like a well-staged Panther ready to pounce, and then boom, have you.
Sure.
So I was the same way with that on him.
Yeah, I could see that with him. I mean, again, like he was a player who just the more and more I watched him, it was funny. Like sometimes the question I ask myself is, okay, if I had a gun to my head and I had to pick him before, if I had to either pick between him and the guy right ahead of him in my ranking list, who do I pick? And I might have done that 30 times. And it always, he just kept on moving up and moving up and moving up because of what he could be. Like you said, with that skating and that lateral mobility and all that stuff, I think his ability to be deceptive with skill is only starting to come out more and more, which is something that a lot of people want to see more of, including myself. I think that's a good translatable skill. And yeah, I think you're right with the whole reading play a little bit too quickly. Like I noticed a few times his transition efficiency was only 56%, which for a defenseman is mediocre to me, but in some games it was as high as 70-80%, which is extremely high. And so I think a lot of that comes from him maybe just, you know, like he was one of the worst defensive zone exit defensemen I've tracked. And I think a lot of that is just him firing stretch passes and, you know, maybe just not hitting his target, or they're intercepted. And those are kinds of things that you might see a lot of in prep school. You know, maybe he just fires stretch passes in prep and just guys finish for him, and that's where he scores a lot of his points. But I think there's more than enough talent to not only be a good stretch passer when the opportunity presents itself, but a great puck carrier and just a nice simple passer as well. When he's dialed in, I thought when he was dialed in, he was a great player for that team. I tracked him and Ryan Ufko, for example. They played together a lot this year, and pretty much across the board, Gustafson's data was better. And so, you know, I think there's a player there. I am not surprised he went undrafted, but I am disappointed. But I mean, if I were his agent or something, I'd just be giving him a pat on the back and be like, look, 32 teams are wrong. Like, I vehemently believe that all 32 teams are just wrong if they think that that's not a player that they want to touch.
Awesome stuff. Couldn't agree more there. Kind of winding it down a little bit. I feel like we could go for a bit here. You and I talking hockey concepts all night long, but maybe let's learn from our mistakes a little bit. So throughout the years, what are some epiphanies you've had or things that have really become apparent to you through this process, especially in your self-reflection? I mean, that's a cornerstone of any good scout, any mm-hmm. Italian evaluator, and clearly you've got that. So I'm curious what you've learned through the years.
The biggest thing is, I think, the concept that, especially with the NHL draft, points aren't everything. Points are great. You love scoring points, but hockey is a sport of micro events, and points are a reward for doing those micro events well. It's not a perfect correlation, but I find myself way more interested in the micro events of the game and valuing how a player passes the puck or how a player gets pucks across blue lines. And I really, it's to the point where I look at, you know, like prospect modeling and using production to estimate prospect potential talent. And it's a good sort of catch-all tool to guide you in the right direction, because it is a reward for doing a lot of things well. But I think that it's not so simple as just picking guys who score a ton of points all the time. And that was a big thing for me to get over, because I started thinking like, well, all these guys who score a ton of points, they don't get drafted very high, so what's wrong with them? And some of them did end up being steals, of course, but some don't. And digging into why that is really fascinating. Like, and a great case study. I mean, last season, 2020's draft was the first year where I really dug in and did the bunch of the data thing. And a player that I was asked to track multiple times by people was Zion Nubeck out in Sweden, and why Zion Nubeck was scoring so many points but wasn't being put high on very many draft boards at all. And it didn't take very long for me to recognize reasons why. And he slipped further in the draft than he was ranked, and I think he was a good pick where he was picked, but I still think he's an NHL long shot. And you can go through a bunch of reasons why, especially with regards to what we were talking about earlier, with regards to skating and pace and keeping up with play and physical resiliency for a small guy like that. I think that those are some serious areas that don't show up on a score sheet, and you could get away with being really small and skilled without those other traits in a league like the Super Elite in or the J20 or whatever you want to call it in Sweden. So the biggest thing that I've picked up on is like digging into the game beyond just scoring points and saying, all right, well, what about the micro events that lead to it, and how valuable those can be, and how much that can make your team's life easier or harder, especially on a big wide scale.
Sounds like you love the players that the players enjoy, but maybe don't shout skill to the Italian talent evaluators.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah, it reminded me of Jack Hughes. I forget Moynihan was his name. You know, they like, the Devils are obviously going to pick him number one. And they ask him, like, do you have any questions? Like, what's your thoughts on Moynihan? And the Devils end up getting him in the fifth round. Like,
yeah,
because that guy goes to bat, does the little things that make life easier on all the other guys. So
yeah,
I think that's super valuable. Like what you said, like the micro events are what matters, and the points just happen to be the rewards for doing well at those micro events.
Yeah. Like that's the last thing I'll say on that is also, especially when you watch, you know, like I'm not the kind of person who worships NHL playoff hockey and you have to draft players who are good in the playoffs. That's not what I do. But I do think that there is merit to the concept of that the playoff, like the playoff pace of play and the playoff intensity level, whether or not the referees call the game by the book, I don't think it's going to matter. The intensity level and pace in the NHL playoffs is never going to decline. It's only going to get faster and faster. And so what I look for are the guys that do those little things and may not score a ton of points. But sometimes, especially in the NHL playoffs, what you need are guys who you can pat on the back as a coach and say, go out there and do not get scored on, and have enough talent and skill to put the puck in the net once in a while, you know, and you just go out there and you can trust them. They're going to chip in all directions. They're going to try to shut down play defensively across blue lines. They're going to try to maintain control moving offensively across blue lines. And the rest, I mean, it's up to their individual talent, but that's what I'm more interested in as a prospect for actual NHL success. And sometimes that's not just drafting the fastest, most skilled, most fancy player out there. You know, guys, but sometimes those two things go hand in hand, of course, but not always, especially outside the first round of the draft. So those are the types of players that I think you draft. Like Dylan Duke is a great example of that, that Tampa Bay picked up far too late this year in the draft. And he's a guy where I think he's one of those, may not score a ton in the NHL, but I feel like once in a while, he's going to score a goal that you're really, really thankful he was on the ice to help you score. And I think that that's an extremely valuable thing that kind of gets overlooked, especially when we're in so deep on the data and analytics and scoring points kind of thing and how much offense matters. I love scoring and I love when guys score points, and that's great. But I try to look at the whole game and say, here's what we need to identify.
Glad you brought up Dylan Duke. Good Cleveland, Ohio kid.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we love our Ohio kids here. we actually picked him in our draft along with Lucas. Yep. So, totally understand that.
Oh, he's a fun one.
Absolutely. He is definitely intense.
Everyone
will say the exact same thing.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I love it.
Me too.
I love it.
Well, this was awesome. A lot of rabbit holes people can go down, and I'd love for people to reach out to myself or Will, and you know, get on Twitter, you know, at Coach Revac. You know, what I forget your Twitter handle.
Scouching.
At Scouching.
Yeah, I snagged it.
Oh, beautiful. You got a great last name there. Just perfectly goes into what you do.
I never said it was my last name. Wink.
Wink, wink.
But yes, it works.
Awesome. Well, that's great. Let's give some shout outs to Will. Where can people find you? How can they support your work? And obviously, you know, if people are in your Discord group, I'm assuming they're paying for that and getting good quality advice through that. So
I like to think
give some
so.
Plugs here.
Yeah. So you can follow me on Twitter at Scouching, YouTube, same thing. Just search Scouching. It'll pop up. You can also financially support me, help pay my bills at patreon.com/scouching. I'm a contributor at McKean's Hockey as well, so you can check out my work there if you're a subscriber. All the videos I make get written reports, as well as some other features that are in the guide and all over the website. So you can check those all out. There's more coming next season on that site as well from me and a few other people there. So stay tuned. And that's a nice starting point.
Awesome. I can't think of a better way for people to really get a keen eye for this, or a McKean eye. For the game here. So thanks, Will, for coming on. Really appreciate it. We'll definitely have you on another time as well.
Beautiful. Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. So before we let you go, though, we'd like to remind you to please like our podcast, subscribe to it, give us a follow, and share this with all the hockey people in your life. We really appreciate growing this community, this podcast. Remember, we also have a newsletter, the Hockey IQ newsletter as well. really excited to continue to grow this. So please help us grow this further by liking, subscribing, following, and sharing with everyone. So appreciate you all. Take care.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch you beauts here next week for a brand new episode.